Welcome to this week's edition of Techonomics. Host Jason Middleton unpacks the appeal of museums. In the United States, museums pulled in 850 million visitors last year. Compare that number to 453 million attending major sporting events. What keeps people coming through the turnstiles at museums? More and more, it's technological advances for the major exhibits. Then we look at a trillion-dollar industry that's being underserved by Silicon Valley, baby boomers, and their cash. Also, Silicon Valley futurist and author Brian Solis. He's designed an entirely new way to publish a book. Think no table of contents needed. And if you're tired of that big black box you're renting as your Wi-Fi router, there's a new sexier option on the market. And it's Amazon's prime choice, too. Techonomics starts now on KGO 810.
Welcome to this week's edition of Techonomics. I am your host and self-proclaimed Stanley Kubrick aficionado, Jason Middleton. We start this week's show with the technological underpinnings of putting on a world-class museum exhibit at a world-class museum. The associate curator at the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco joins us to discuss the headlining high-profile Stanley Kubrick retrospective. Here are some comparison numbers to ponder. 453 million people attended major sporting events last year. Now, 850 million people turned the turnstiles last year at American museums. Growth market, right? So what kind of technology goes into planning a major exhibit? And what audience-facing tech comes into play as well? Finally, the economics of major exhibits. What's the math like? How's it play out? Here's my conversation with the Kubrick curator.
My name is Anastasia James, and I am the associate curator at the Contemporary Jewish Museum.
And let's talk about your career pattern to get you to San Francisco. I understand you're new to the metropolis, if you will.
Sure. I moved here in November 1st to be exact, so I've almost been here a year, although everyone still refers to me as the new transplant from New York City. Uh-huh. I moved here specifically to take the job at the Contemporary Jewish Museum. Prior to that, I was living in New York City, working as an independent curator and book editor. In the past few years, I've co-edited a number of books related to Warhol, a book of Billy Naim's photography, and a book of Bridget Berlin's photography. Mm-hmm. I was also working for the Queen's Museum, where I organized a show about Warhol's Most Wanted Men paintings. Prior to that, I attended graduate school at the Center for Curatorial Studies, BARD, and I worked for a lot of institutions, including DIA, the Andy Warhol Museum, the Carnegie Museum, and a Kunstverein in Stuttgart.
Along that line, I'm wondering when you ran into our mutual friend Graham Shearing.
I met Graham. I'm actually from Pittsburgh, and that's where I met Graham. I've known Graham for quite some time now. Uh-huh. He's one of my closest friends.
That's outstanding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I consider him a good friend as well. But let's talk about your experience here in the last year that you've come on to the Contemporary Jewish Museum. Let's talk about maybe the lead exhibit you have right now, which is Stanley Kubrick. What would you call that? A Stanley Kubrick compendium? Or
they call it a retrospective. We've kind of changed the title so it's Stanley Kubrick, the retrospective. Usually when it's traveling around, they just call it Stanley Kubrick.
I see.
But they do consider it a full retrospective of his work, beginning with his early photographs and ending with his unfinished film, AI,
right,
which Spielberg finished for him.
That's right. Let's get under the hood a little bit. Now, do curators come to you and suggest this, or is it already on the circuit? Do you want it, or do you initiate it?
When I arrived at the Contemporary Jewish Museum, the Stanley Kubrick exhibition was already signed on. Our director had seen it in Los Angeles a number of years ago and decided that we absolutely had to bring it to San Francisco.
That was LACMA, right?
It was at LACMA. That's correct. So when I arrived, I knew that the show was already signed on for the season, and I was tasked with kind of shepherding in and organizing it and making it work for our spaces. In general, you know, curators are always on the lookout for traveling shows or shows that might travel. And we make a point to take both traveling shows and originate shows just to kind of mix up the schedule a little bit.
I see. Now, Kubrick was notorious for being overprepared and over-researched, and luckily so, honestly. I imagine his exhibit is very involved. Now, let's talk about a little bit of planning the exhibit for the purpose of presenting to the public. What goes on behind the scenes? How do you prepare for such a large exhibit?
Well, this is actually the largest exhibit I've ever worked on. When I arrived, I was given kind of a packet of documents related to the exhibition. The key document would be the checklist. And I learned that there were 1,200 objects available for me to borrow from the original lending institution who had organized the exhibition.
Wow.
So I had to make a decision out of those 1,200 which objects I wanted to show, which objects would fit in this space, which objects were appropriate for this space. So I began a month-long process of kind of cutting down the show to a manageable size, organizing it by section. I decided to hang the exhibition chronologically, which was not something that all venues have done.
I see.
A lot of institutions have decided to organize the space thematically.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're bringing your curatorial experience right there mm-hmm. to bear. What about your technical experience? Was that a different experience as well?
The technical experience has really been changing a lot. We used to build physical models where we would kind of mock up the exhibition in real space. And now what we do is we have teams that build AutoCAD or Google SketchUp models on the computers, and we move tiny little replicas around of all of the paintings to see what they would look like. And what that allows us to do is we can then send those files. In this instance, we were working with an institution in Frankfurt. We can send these files to them. They can review them and send them back with notes like PDFs, whereas if we were building a physical model, that would have been impossible.
Right.
So it makes it a lot easier to borrow exhibitions from overseas.
I see.
Even from across the country than it was prior.
So let's talk about the transition from those schematics and those notes, the collaboration that goes into the tech on that platform, and then the actual exhibition space. Is that pulling teeth with boxing gloves on, or is it a lot more simplistic than that?
It's a little bit more simplistic. You mean in terms of translating from...
Correct, from the 3D modeling into the physical space.
So you always think that everything looks perfect when you have it in AutoCAD or mm-hmm. SketchUp. And then when you get into the space, sometimes you realize that things are a lot larger. They have more presence than you initially thought they did. Like, you need to feature a certain painting that you didn't feature when you were building the model. So things obviously change once you're in the installation period. But we do continue to use those tech-built models to kind of inform how we hang the exhibition.
I see.
Once the show arrives, and it arrives in crates from overseas, and we begin unpacking them, it's a long process of our conservators and our registrars looking and making sure that everything is in good condition, documenting it, photographing it. That goes into an online database that we keep. Then we begin to hang it on the wall. But this process takes, I think, for the Kubrick exhibition, we installed for almost a month.
I see. Let's talk about tech that's audience-facing mm-hmm. once it's on the floor. Are you using any sort of new technologies, maybe not new technologies, or maybe applying existing technologies to help people get more engaged with the mm-hmm. exhibit?
One of the interesting things about installing exhibitions is the first phase of installation is always the tech install. So what we do is we do a preliminary install of the lighting, of any audio, of any video that's going to be in the exhibition. And then from that, we begin placing objects. In the Kubrick exhibition in particular, we have a lot of video. We have clips from all of the films present in the exhibition. And we also have in our Yud space, which was a space built by Daniel Liebskin specifically for sound installations, we are playing all of Kubrick's soundtracks.
Ooh, wow.
So
are you like me, Anastasia? Do you think that the world would have been a better place had he been able to make his Napoleon movie?
I think so. And there may be a chance that someone will produce it sometime in the future.
That seems to be the golden goose in Hollywood. They've been chasing that for decades, it seems like.
I've heard rumors that it might be a miniseries sometime soon.
Oh, wow. Now, that would apply because the existing Napoleon movie just doesn't add up.
No. And the amount of research that went into the project, which you will see at the exhibition, is just phenomenal. I mean, someone literally could take that research and turn it into a,
absolutely.
A film tomorrow
yep.
if they wanted to. We have a small section in the back of the galleries dedicated to two unfinished projects, that and the Aryan Papers, mm-hmm. which was an unfinished Holocaust film that he basically put a halt on when Spielberg's Schindler's List was released.
I see. Let's turn a little bit to the economics of major exhibitions like this. We have to. As I was researching for this interview with you, I noticed that 850 million people turned the turnstiles in American museums last year. 453 million people went to major sporting events. So you might be in a growth industry that continues to grow. And I'm wondering how the economics for this kind of plays out for you. Is it something that plants seeds for future exhibits? Is it something? I imagine this has been a real crowd getter.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I kind of touched upon before when I was saying that we bring in both traveling shows and we originate exhibitions of our own, one reason that museums bring in blockbuster shows is to bring bodies in the door. And certainly the Stanley Kubrick exhibition has been doing just that. And it has done that in every city that it's been presented in. This is the 15th venue mm-hmm. that it's been shown out. during the opening weekend, we had record numbers for the institution.
Outstanding.
And so that is certainly a factor. And, you know, it's a reality. It's something you have to think about when you're planning exhibitions. Will this be a popular exhibition? What is the target audience? You know, this is the kind of language we bat around while we're proposing exhibitions. You know, is it better to show this in the summer or in, you know, this during the school year when students will be coming in? Mm-hmm. So we weigh all of those options when thinking about when we're going to show a certain exhibition, what exhibitions we're going to show. All of those things play a factor in what we present when.
So what's coming up? What's on the horizon for the CJM?
Well, we have a staff of three curators at the moment, so it's really nice to have a full department, and we kind of rotate responsibilities. The Kubrick exhibition will be open until October 30th. After that, we'll be opening a group show of contemporary artists that deal with post-memory that my colleague Pierre Francois is curating. In January, I'm opening the first retrospective of the contemporary artist Carrie Leibowitz, which should be a very fun exhibition.
Absolutely.
And in November of next year, I'm opening up an exhibition dealing with the archive of a mystic rabbi who operated a greeting card company in the 1950s.
Welcome to San Francisco. We're so happy to have you here, and thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
That was Anastasia James, Associate Curator at the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco. All right, we have to pay the bills now, but coming up after the break, we have a wealth management expert looking at a major, almost untapped market, baby boomer wealth. Why is Silicon Valley whiffing on this? I'm Jason Middleton. This is Techonomics. Please come on back.